Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 17 of the Shuttlepod podcast. Today is Wednesday, May the 4th. Be with you. Sorry, wrong franchise. I am Kayla Iacovino, joined by my cohorts.
My name is Jared Whitley.
And this is Brian Drew.
And today we are very pleased to welcome a very special guest. He is an author, editor, interviewer, archivist, host, producer, voiceover, actor, and more, Larry Nemechek, a.k.a. Dr. Trek, who is the author of the classic Star Trek The Next Generation companion book, and the more recently released Stellar Cartography Maps and Book Set, which is fantastic, by the way. Highly recommend picking that one up. He is the twice portrayer of Star Trek Continues' own Dr. McCoy, producer of the fan-historic The Con of Wrath documentary, spokesman for a nonprofit enterprise in space global student project Orbiter, and founder of the pioneering Portal 47 deep dive fan experience. So welcome to the Shuttlepod, Larry. Great to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks. And that's all the time we have on today's show. Yeah. No, guys, thank you. And I've watched this, you know, you're 17 episodes in, but you don't look a day over 12. So
that's flattering.
So congratulations. Yeah. And only 30 more to go till 47. So
exactly.
It's an opportune time. But congratulations. I'm glad it's booming and doing all good things for you.
Thank you. This is our Squire of Gothos episode. Because, you know, that's the 17th episode of TOS.
I was going to say, are you going to, so you're looking at having 730 something plus, I guess now we can up the total eventually, but.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're just going to echo each one.
The sky's the limit.
You might want to skip over the Shades of Gray or the Threshold or the episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Don't have a 13th and the children floor shall in this leave. Elevator.
Yeah.
The Code of Honor.
Yeah. Anyway, no, it's great to be here, guys, and thanks for having me on.
Larry, we really appreciate that you join us. I wanted to say, you know, just in a personal note, I remember when I first got the Star Trek Companion, and it was just the first 5 seasons, right? And then eventually we were able to get one that was the complete series
that once it was updated,
had the last 2 seasons. And you know, at first I looked at this and, you know, this is great. We can read synopses of the episodes. We can see pictures of it. And then you'd have, like behind-the-scenes stuff in there, which in the era before the internet, before Memory Alpha, that book could not be beaten, right? That was just an amazing resource to have as a fan to be able to learn more about the shows and to learn how the shows were made. So, you know, personally, I just want to thank you for giving that to us for fandom, and compliment you for the great work you did, and then ask you to sort of start our conversation with how did you get the job to do that book?
Well, thanks, you guys. Thank you. I mean, anything I've ever done in Trek with one foot in fandom and the other foot in a professional career, because I actually do have a journalism degree and actually have a theater degree, I've done, it's because what I wanted to do. Or it's because when I was, you know, a little pup fan, when Star Trek was little pup fandom, because there wasn't anything else like it, you know, unless you were an Elvis or a Bing Crosby or a, you know, Monkees or a Beatles fan or something, or some movie star. There wasn't pop culture like this before Star Trek. But I just remembered thinking, well, this is fine, but I want to know what I want to know. You know, I mean, basically, when I got a chance to have the keys, I went for it. Although I didn't think about it being radical, you know, or subversive. I just thought, okay, finally, I get to do things the way I want to do. And I guess that's resonated with a few people. I realized that I went to my first convention, and my image of my first convention and going overnight was we would all sit around and talk about Star Trek background. And I took a box with my tech manual, my medical reference, and my blueprints, and my Making of Star Trek book, and all this concordance. And I got there, and I went, oh, that's not what we all sit around and do. Okay. But that was just kind of an interesting lesson for me. I realized that... There's all kinds of colors in the tapestry of fandom, and I'm not, everyone's not like me, and I'm not like everybody else. Itic, almost, as it were.
Yeah, exactly, itic.
So anyway, I was just a big background fan. I'll try to make this short as possible. Hopefully over the years I've gotten better at it, but I loved I get the first, the making of Star Trek was the first Bible. That was about all there was in those days. And you glommed onto that. It was annoying as hell because there wasn't an index or anything. So you, one of the first things I did was go through and pull out all the pieces and put them in an order so I could find the section about deflector shields and I could find the section about, you know, what a tricorder stood for, you know, sensor, analyzing, computing, recording, I mean. And then the concordance came, and my mind exploded because one day it hit me that, I'm sorry, the tech manual, and I was pissed because there were all these, you know, like it was the hint of more to come, you know, because it was supposedly downloaded into the Omaha Airbase databanks, and this came out of what they wound up with after Kirk and Sulu and the Enterprise, you know, like went away, what they were left with, and it was top secret classified, but. The medical reference especially came, and I thought, holy crap, look at all these stars. There's all these just unrelated stars and planets floating around. And so the big compulsive thing after I decided it was going to be too much trouble to totally flesh out the tech manual with all the pages you didn't get on the scale that he gave was to start connecting up all the real stars with the planets. And if it was an actual astronomical star, figure it out. And the only thing we had was the early, early scale that was in the tech manual, which got, you know, bypassed a few years later. But put the actual stars in, and then by the story points, plot out where things had to be, where all the fictional stars had to be. And then if a planet was just a name, you know, hook it up with some actual star that would have a Goldilocks spot, you know, that was big enough and in the right stellar class, out of Obeifying. Fine girl, kiss me right now, Susie. What was that? KLM? I used to know this. OBA.
OBA, fine girl, kiss me.
Yeah. And then S was on the end, but it was OBA, fine. Yeah. FG, M, and one more. Anyway, those are the ones that by thought could have habitable class M worlds around them. So anyway, it was a lot of fun doing that. And then I hooked up with Jeff Mandel when he was doing his tech zine. And we were going to publish. I had done all this as a poster with rub-on letters, like billions of letter set rub-on letters. And a poster hanging in my dorm room, and then hooked up with Jeff Mandel. And I told him about it. And he said, yeah, I want it for my tech zine. And then he got called in to do the original Star Trek map, so we didn't get to do the scale because they improved the scale. But I had my first taste of amazement, and then, you know, bitterness when I got screwed and wasn't in the final thing. And then anyway, fast forward. But I went back, got a life, thank you very much. And then when Next Generation came out, thought that someone should jump in and do Bijou's Concordance only for the new series, and I would use it as my entry into desktop publishing and Macs. And so somebody showed me Early Day FileMaker, and that was my databasing, and I still have those, you know, files. I still go back and use them now, although it's faster to go online. But if I want to trust my notes, I go to my own stuff. And that's, you know, from there, the writers at Next Generation got a hold of things and were using my books before there was a Memory Alpha or an internet and anything commercial.
Oh,
and
that's then, so flattering.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. Yeah, I would. I feel like I've said these stories for ages, but it was funny. I mean, I got it. A little light bulb went on when I came out and Richard Arnold's, to thank me for that, gave me a set tour, like lots of people got set tours if you had some kind of an in. And I remember getting introduced, and then I met Eric Stillwell then when he was the script coordinator. And they'd introduce me to somebody's assistant or something, or some writer, but usually it was assistants. And they'd go, this is Larry, he's from Oklahoma. And they'd go, yeah, sure. And he's the guy that does that that thing that we get every year. And then their face would light up and like, oh my God, you've saved my ass so many times and you've saved my boss's ass so many times. And I was like, there's a little power here, you know. So anyway, and then it turned into the companion. It wasn't an encyclopedia, but it was behind the scenes. And all I could think of was, oh my God, I'm thinking of Stephen Poe Whitfield's book. And it's got to be like that, but I have to do it in 3 months, which was insane. You know, and it's like the worst thing would be to have a piece of shit that would sit there and be ridiculed by fandom when I knew what I could do, but could I do it in 3 months? So
wow,
that blue book you had wound up being a 6-month project. And the only thing, because I was fresh out of grad school, that is annotated with endnotes. But that's how it got done. And then it was kind of off and running from that. So there you go. Almost the Reader's
Digest. It's one of the great Star Trek books, Larry. Absolutely. It really is.
Well, it did throw me at first when people come up and say, this is my favorite Christmas present when I was 3 years old. You know, it was, okay, it's been that long. But it's very cool. It's very great to know that that was, you know. And here's the thing. I remember, and it wasn't, what's interesting was dealing with a licensed book with a publisher where they really call the shots. I mean, you have all kinds of minutia that you can make choices over, and you can throw things in. But a lot of the broad strokes, they just do. They just, it's going to be this, it's going to be this many pages, here's the price point, blah, 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 blah. And you even your own things, you know, you negotiate a little bit. But I just remembered how, as a fan, I was a little irked during the original series movie years when Alan Asherman's, you know, great book that Pocket did and commissioned so that they would have their own version of the making of Star Trek, kind of, because which was still with Ballantine then, who used to have the nonfiction license. And I remember how irked I was when every time there'd be a movie every 2 years, they would stick on, you know, like four new pages and put a new cover on it and have you pay for it. And I remember thinking, I'm not going to do that. Well, I very quickly found out that, you know, that wasn't in my power to decide it, yes or no. Yeah. But I'm still glad that when we did have a leap, you know, that we added the last two seasons and then Generations, and then they held off to see how long the Next Gen movie era would go. And then, you know, and then we had the black cover when the last Next Gen movie came out. So that's one thing I remember thinking that was, I don't want some fan out there thinking, oh, they're just going to slap four pages on every 2 years and, you know, charge me $15 for it or something. And I'm glad that worked out that way. And the people have a fond memory of it.
Yeah, they don't want to feel ripped off. Well, you know, again, with this being May the 4th, how many times have Star Wars fans bought the same three movies over and over and over again just because they had a slightly different cover?
I know I have.
It's not quite as bad as with versions of Next Gen. I mean, any of the Trek series, but yeah. I saw somebody did a meme today where they took May the 4th Be With You, which I've said all day long and turned it around and all that, but somebody had done a May LaForge Be With You.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah. Lamar Burton tweeted it out.
It's like, now let's not go start any riots, guys. I've always thought this was an invention of the mainstream media here, this big Star Wars, Star Trek fight. But anyway, cute day. Take it and, you know, hijack it all. Piggyback it all.
A friend of mine on Twitter asked me today, why don't Star Trek fans have a... something comparable, and I say, well, we've got First Contact Day.
Yeah, like, First Contact
right.
Day.
A month ago.
Well, we have two.
And he said, gosh, we got a lot of work to do to spread the gospel on that. So, you know, we'll see what we can do for 2017.
I felt like this year First Contact Day was kind of under-promoted a little bit. And there's also yeah. Star Trek Day. There's also
September 8th,
yeah, every year. So there's right. two right there.
And that will get recognized this year. I have a feeling.
Yeah, I think definitely. So. I hope it's not like the bicentennial and we're all sick of it by the time it gets here. I kind of doubt that. But, yeah. I just would tell your friend there that he's not traveling in the right, you know, quadrant or the right sector or whatever.
Oh, that would have been clever. Where were you when I needed you a few hours ago?
Right here in Trekland, you know.
All right, so I am chomping at the bit over here, and I would like to fast forward.
That's what that noise was. Okay.
That was that noise. Yeah, that was me. Because I'm dying to know. I mean, we haven't had Star Trek on television for over a decade now, and it's coming back.
Amazing!
Yay!
Yes.
And
God.
Larry, with you being someone who's had a foot or a leg or a body in that world throughout Star Trek's history. I'm really curious to hear your new thoughts on. Obviously, we don't know much about the new series, but you know, what are your hopes and dreams for the CBS's new television show?
Well, it's kind of funny. For one thing, let me just say that every step of the way, from the first time they announced it to today, which was like just what, last fall, last November, something. Everything they've done, I thought, oh my God, are they really going to do this the right way? Which the right way being defined as the way I would do it, you know, and the little, you know, the little because not being very privy to it, and I know not all arms of CBS were like that privy to it, you know, and I've blogged about this at Trekland. It very quickly after a time or two, well, woke up that day. Here's the news, and I thought, oh my God, well, we're finally here. We're finally back to that day, and even sooner than. Might have thought, because at the very least, I thought we were going to have to let all three movies go by, maybe a fourth, before somebody was out of their comfort zone enough, or in their comfort zone enough to let it happen.
I think, a lot of us, I think, felt that way, too.
Yeah. And but at the same time, when I knew a lot of people, including people within the franchise or the corporate body, were thinking was if we let the 50th go by without even at least an announcement or some move on a new series, if the third movie, good, bad, or indifferent, winds up being the pinnacle of the celebration, you know, on screen, that's just sad. I mean, that would be a huge loss, and lots of people ought to be shot to let the 50th anniversary of your, you know, franchise go by, just on a business side. What's weird, what's been really weird, guys, is the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, to see how, you know, it used to be the old days was fans, you know, if they were mad about something, oh, Paramount this and Paramount that, and blah, 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 which was funny because it's not like a monolith. There were like all the arms of, you know, Paramount, and sometimes they'd be pitted against each other internally. But what's been amazing is the last 10 years or so, a lot of the goals of the money-making arm and the just, damn it, it's just a fandom and we love it arm, they've been like aligned. It's been really strange. So, I mean, I watched the foreign fans talking about how, will we get to see it? Will we get to see the new series? And I'm like, of course you're going to get to see it.
Yeah.
They're going to find every way there is to sell it to you. Just calm down, guys. Just calm down. You'll have it. But no, when that news came out, it was like, okay, here we are. It's that day is here. And then after a couple of hours of letting it soak in, wait a minute. This is totally right now a business thing. They don't have any idea about the content or a lot of those details, but this is being driven by CBS and the big picture game of the streaming service and why are we paying middlemen, you know, like Netflix and Hulu, and we'll be the first ones. And from an industry point of view, it was, and not that I've got an MBA in media communication, but it's like they want to be the first ones in. And just like with UPN launching, just like with, hey, we can do a syndicated network, we can bypass the networks, you know, with Next Generation or UPN launching with Voyager, or spending so much money on a Blu-ray restoration with the original series and Next Generation. It's Star Trek that's not the sacrificial lamb, but the family jewels, you know, flagship that they're going to start this new paradigm of media with, and at the same time make a lot of people happy. What I didn't expect was that whole wave of, no way, I'm not going to buy this. They want $6 a month from me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like,
no, they will, though. They will buy it.
Well, they will. Well, it's, I flash back to, and I don't want to, like, you know, knock the dust off here, but it was so like 1986 again.
Yeah.
When you had this, we didn't even have the internet to magnify it, but you had that vocal. I don't care. It's not Star Trek without Kirk Spock McCoy.
It's not Star Trek without Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got to be Kirk Spock McCoy. If it's not Kirk Spock, I mean, it was just like this bumper sticker phrase. I'm not going to watch it if it's not Kirk Spock McCoy.
There's, you know? There are still people that say that exact line, though, today, that they're not going to watch it unless there's no Star Trek except for the original.
I was
going to
say, and they've
Trek
never
Trek
watched
real.
Next Generation, or what are you?
Yeah.
I think there are. What's weird is I heard from people as much, you know, dinging as Enterprise got back in the day, less so now, maybe. But back in the day, there were an awful lot of people who came out from under their rock and watched Enterprise who had not watched anything all through the next-gen DS9 Voyager era. I was just astounded at how many people back then came out. Yeah.
Well, why is that? Do you think that after 14 years of Star Trek on TV, they came out of their shell?
It was. I think they were just all motivated totally by the subject matter and the format. Oh, look, this leads into Kirk. Let's watch it. Oh, look, Andorians and... eventually, and Tellarites even more eventually, you know, and old and Vulcans being a, you know, Vulcans being a focused species like it was in the original series with Spock. But I just remember being struck by how many people said, I didn't watch all those other shows, but you know, this is going to lead into Kirk, so I'll watch it. It was interesting. Of course, they were all in their 50s and 60s, you know, by then. But anyway, it's just the whole reaction to the new series, the streaming series. I just want to say, I mean, in 86, I just want to say, shut up, people. Just shut up. It's a new show. Gene is running it. Shut up.
Yeah, just be happy about it.
Yes. Will you stop ruining this? You know, don't watch.
You know what it is? You know what it is, too, though? I think there's been so many eras of Star Trek now that everybody's got their Star Trek. So there are a lot of people out there right now, too, who think that TNG is the ultimate version of Star Trek. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are deeply offended by anything but TNG. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I enjoyed pointing out these times of, you know, what, it's not Kirk, Spock, McCoy, it's not Star Trek. What, it doesn't go anywhere. They're on a station, are you kidding me? What, they're lost? No right. Klingons and Cardassians and Romulans, are you kidding me? You know, right. Oh, it's a prequel? Star Trek is about going into the future, not going backwards. I hated that.
Right.
Yep. Sorry, but I think it's all still in the future, guys. I think it's all still in the... Anyway, so yeah, so it's going to be that. And you'll see how many people, like Republicans with Trump maybe, as soon as it finally is out there and moving along, you'll see how many people come aboard. So we'll see. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up... Trump into an otherwise perfectly nice Star Trek discussion. But.
It's timely, given the news of last night.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I almost want to do, if I had time travel, I would want to go, because I know what would happen. I'd want to go back. So they announced that in, what, November? It was right after the holidays started. I want to go back to about March, you know, 6 months before, 12 months before, and say, hey, guys, time travel back and say, if you had the chance to have a new Star Trek series on TV and all you had to do was pay $6 a month, what's your answer? Hell yeah. You know, I don't get it. I don't get
it. See, I think a lot of it isn't necessarily that $6 a month is too much. It's just at this point, people have so many different online subscriptions that I think they're complaining about a lot of that. I mean, like I pay for Netflix and I pay for YouTube Red.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, if I had CBS too, do I need all three of those? And so, I mean, there's certain, you know, people have an entertainment budget and it's fungible. And so I think if anyone cares about Star Trek enough to complain about this, they will find $6 in their entertainment budget.
Yeah. And I mean, how many episodes is it going to be? Maybe 12 to 15, maybe. So you have it for 3 months out of the year and you throw it away. You discontinue it. For the remainder of the year. What's it going to cost you a year? $18? Yeah. $24 maybe?
Yeah, and you might actually find out you like some of the other shows they put on or whatever. But it's exactly what I thought. You DVR it and you've got it all until they get it out on disc and start, you know, going down that road. But I just couldn't get it. I just felt like I'd flash back to 86 again and was watching the short, you know, the short-term thinking there. Are you kidding me? But then, of course, the big thing was each step of the way, and I wrote a piece and I said, here's five questions I want to know. And, of course, everybody's talking about, is it canon or is it going to be JJ? Because, it's got Orsi, it's got Alex Kurtzman involved. Oh. And I go, because I'd had some insight on this, wasn't talking about it a lot, but I had been talking for a long time, just generically to a lot of the, like Ron Moore and Ira Bear when I had the chance, and said, so, eventually they're going to do a series again. Do you want to be part of it? And a lot of the old guard were sounding really old and tired. Oh, my God, there's so many hours of canon. And I was just like, oh, come on, don't disappoint me, guys. Come on, really, really? But, you know, Brian Fuller, well, was Singer, was out there pitching. A lot of people have said that. I knew of a couple of people who wanted to be open to be able to do it. And what finally was dawning on me that a lot of the guys and girls, I guess, but a lot of the people that had worked on Trek before that people would be thrilled to come back in, it would be a wonderful, you know, mark of confidence. They're hooked up in other deals. They can't get free, you know, with studios or with producers. So of the ones who were kind of free, Brian was really kind of top of the list of the ones that I knew, A, wanted, really, really wanted to, and B, were free. And also, when you say they really wanted to, also the ones who have, they've showrun enough. Aside from their Trek cred, they have actually showrun a show, produced it, that the outside suits and media and money lenders would go, oh, okay. And by being at that position where, you know, he's like Brian has done among a lot of shows, and some of them were nipped in the bud too soon, so he's got some karma coming back at him, you know, but Pushing Daisies and Hannibal, just for two. But also in his own skin, he's not self-loathing to think, oh, great, I'll do this, it'll be popular, and I'll just be tagged as the Star Trek guy forever, and I'll never get to do anything else, you know. And he's comfortable enough in his own skin that he was out there pitching along like other people were. But, you know, he was the highest profile, the ones that were really wanting to do that. So the day I woke up and he'd been announced, I was like, holy shit, they're actually going to do this. They're going to do this the right way. Yeah. And I knew, knowing Brian, I knew from day one when he was a little junior writer on Voyager that – I went back and looked at my interview with him then, most of which hasn't been released, but except the Portal 47 people have it now. to see what a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool fan that I remembered him being. And then also watching the dynamic of the junior writers coming along and banging heads with whoever was the showrunner, just in a normal writer's room kind of way, you know, and then with Rick Berman, and knowing where their instincts were. And some of that they get seasoned. Some of it's young piss and vinegar, and they get seasoned a little. But some of that's their, you know, their initial instincts. And then, da-da, look at these incredibly creative series that he's done and these incredibly out-of-the-box points of view and production looking all. So I was, you know, very excited. And then the day I woke up and you know, Nick Meyer is going to be on the team, I just creamed my pants and said, my God, they're just going for it, you know.
Yeah, that's when I was like, okay, they're going to definitely do this the right way.
Aside from the whole Toronto thing, I'm just very, very, not pissed, but I think I said pissed on Twitter. I'm not surprised, but I'm just, it's just sad. It's just sad.
Wait, why is that? What's wrong with Toronto?
Well, because it's not here in LA where we can all keep an eye on it and keep track of it and have the, you know, it's partly selfish, but it's also practical. Now you've got to like fly to Toronto to, sorry, I'm being selfish, but also realistic. And the other thing was, and a couple of things that also rounded that out where I don't have to feel so selfish and alone, is there's a huge army of talent on and off camera here. A lot of it that worked on the series, especially knowing Brian was involved in some of these older hands and people who know people and know the work already, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel in their experience like happened a few times with the movies, where they're disappointed because they won't be able to. I mean, some people, if they want them, can fly up and be there. And it's not like you're talking about a 20... We're thinking, because it's not formally announced yet, we're thinking it's, like you said, a shorter streaming, you know, premium BBC streaming series. So you wouldn't be up there the whole year if you were having to be on site.
Right.
But still, it's a big commitment to have to be up there for part of the time. And some of the guilds, some of the departments, that's no big deal. Some of them, it is a big deal. But a lot of people feel like there's no, you know, they can't fly up to Toronto and stay there for the, if they were invited and ask, they can't do that. So I've heard from a few of them that were really hoping to be involved some way. I mean, not as a fan, they're fans, but they're like jobs. And it's like, hey, I know the people that may be running this and I'll go see about a job. And, you know, that's that. And then the fan side takes over too a little bit and says, oh, well, that was kind of sad that I can't be involved with it. So yeah, it's selfish, but there's economics too. But oh well, hey, it's there. I just keep thinking it's happening. It's happening. Get over it. And the writers' room is going to be here. Maybe post will be in LA. You know, so we'll see.
Yeah, probably. I thought so.
Yeah.
And two, I mean, I guess it's one of those things. If you're working in a major capacity, if you're one of the actors or something like that on the show, you're not going to have time for anything else anyway, right? During shooting. So for someone like who has that much of an active role, does it make a difference where it takes place? As far as them being able to do other things.
I'm not talking about that, and they're also getting paid for it. What I'm talking about are the stand-ins, the stunt people, the crew people, you know.
Crafts people.
Yeah, the crafts people. I mean, all the different, you know, all the different crews, you know, lighting and gaffers and electricians and, you know, craft service and makeup and costuming and, you know, art department. And what, you know, some of the designers and things may come up from L.A., but a lot of the nuts and bolts people, the people that I'm bringing out with Portal 47, actually, you know, to fans, those kind of people that are in the fabric and don't always get the credit, or if they do, their name goes by in 2 seconds, if at all.
Sure.
In the credits, those kind of people won't be able to take part. And that talent pool that's there, that it's 10 years ago seems like a, you know, 11 years ago seems like a million years ago, but in a lot of ways it hasn't been that long, so. But we'll get over it. The important thing is that it's there, damn it. It's there.
Mm.
So they're still going to need someone to make sure that all of the canon is followed correctly. I mean, I know there's Memory Alpha and there's obviously the books that you and others have put out. But don't you think they're going to have someone on set or someone as a major part of the production to be making sure all the rules of the Star Trek universe are followed?
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, like, you know, the gut reaction... I mean, Brian is a pretty good fanboy and carries around a lot of stuff in his head, but it does get minutiae. And sometimes even he, you know, a lot of the guys that are really, really consider themselves good fans as well as, you know, totally competent professional visionary writers, do get a little paranoid about, you know, slipping. Oh my God. They'll be like, we'll have 5,000 things right in this show and there'll be that one damn thing and everybody will jump on us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I threw my hat in the ring, but, you know, I'm not in Canada, and I'm sure lots of other people have sounded off too, and hopefully, I know hopefully there'll at least be like a science advisor, and we haven't heard any of that yet. I do know that I do know that there's been kind of a hold off on a lot of promotion and interviewing and that kind of thing with the new series just for a little while longer.
Because of the movie?
Until a little bit more times, huh?
Just so it did not interfere with the movie?
Partly, yeah. Yeah. And it really threw... It was kind of like, remember that thing I've talked about the fallow time for so long now, since 2005, but it's kind of like, oh, be careful what you wish for. It's kind of like, oh, everything is ramping up, and now we're going to get back into the same but different kinds of the way all the different gears of the big machine have to work together. And as far as like publicity and production and licensing and online and all that kind of stuff, and people who haven't really worked... You know, Star Trek has been this thing of all these old dead shows that come out on Blu-ray and show on TV. Well, now there's a living, breathing baby being born, finally, into the divorce family. To extend that tortured metaphor some more. So it's like all the support system has to introduce themselves to each other. And, now we're not even all in L.A. It's going to be bi-coastal. So anyway, so there's a lot of new moving parts. You're going to have to figure it out. And they're not all on the same lot together. And if it's a short season, it won't be the entire, you know, for a lot of good reasons, it won't be the grind of 26 or even 22 or 20 probably. But on the same right. the same token, it won't be quite as, baptized in fire kind of a feeling after a year or two.
Mm.
So... You know, of people getting, you know, not just the people on stage, but all the ancillary things that you know have to work together, like I just rattled off that I used to toil in after I discovered and moved out to LA and found and work with for so long. So that's all that, you know, that's the kind of thing that people aren't thinking about, and that's fine, they shouldn't be, but that's also all in play. But that'll get sorted out. That'll all, you know, we will eventually get to where we're all excited to see a show back on, damn it, and in such great capable hands. I've heard people like worry about it, and I'm just guys, mm-mm. it's Brian doing the show. It's going to be okay. And they're letting him do it.
What is there to worry about?
Well, you know, a lot of people got weirded out when it was Alex Kurtzman. And what I started to say a while ago was this whole thing about what writers and writer producers are tied up with other deals and other contracts and other studios and all that. I saw that the first moment, I went, "Oh, okay, well, this is odd." I was really hoping for Prime, as I think anybody who does, you know, science and math. I mean, I'm not a hater on the JJs. I just say, hey, there's human instinct. There's 700 and something hours of Prime out there. There's 4 hours, about to be six, of the Altverse.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's human nature? Of course, the thing that you know the most of is what you feel most comfortable with.
Sure.
And when there was no real drive to expand that, even with like an animated series or anything with the JJ-verse, it was kind of like, well, they don't seem to be particularly careful about, you know, caring about empire building. And then when JJ mm-hmm. went over to Star Wars, that, you know, that became even truer. But people freaking out about Alex Kurtzman, it was like, wait a minute, stop and think, guys. He and Bob Orsi, like, they haven't split up, but they've gone their separate ways. They're not a partnership. Kurtzman had nothing to do with Bob Orsi's movie, let alone the one that Justin Lin and Simon Pegg wound up with, you know? So I don't think he's married to this. What I guessed at was that he was somebody that CBS had relations with, that when this was out of the gate as a business thing that they wanted to start selling, and they didn't even have, you know, if they'd had a showrunner, they would have announced it then. They would have done all kinds of, you know, clicks and you know, soothing noises at the time, but they had him, and so he's a nameplate, he and his producing partner. So I kind of got the idea that was somebody they had deals with and was comfortable to them, and they could point out to the great unwashed who enjoy the movies or don't care and say, look, we have a Star Trek veteran on board. But I just had the feeling that he had no interest in being like a hands-on showrunner, and that's where your gut takes in, I guess, kicks in. So those people that were worried about that, what got me was the people kicking about the streaming service by the midway through that first day. Not even so much about, you know, Alex Kurtzman being involved. But
yeah, I think a lot of that, I imagine a lot of that concern comes from, because like you said, the whole thing about $6 a month, I think like anyone vocal enough to say that they care about it is easily going to shell out $6 a month. I think that's the thought that some people had was the idea that non-Trekkies wouldn't shell out the $6 a month for some streaming service. And so they were viewing it as, well, Star Trek is going to get more viewership if people sort of happen upon it rather than having to go looking for it. Although, and I think that's a legitimate concern to think about, but I think the fact that what we've seen coming out of CBS has sort of quelled my fears on that front anyway. How they've handled it and the fact that they're using Star Trek to prop up this new streaming service, which is really this, you know, first of its kind in the industry kind of a thing. It seems to me that they have enough confidence in the show and they're going to market it appropriately if they continue to make, you know, business decisions that is going to end up making them and their shareholders lots of money, which is what they have been doing. You know, to me, that sort of quelled my fears on that front. Just the idea that CBS seems to know what it's doing. So I'm kind of going to take a backseat and watch the whole thing unfold, you know?
Right. I mean, I couldn't have predicted some of these steps, like Brian first and then having Nick involved and just the intelligent way that, you know, and then adding in Rod and Trevor as executive producers, even if they're kind of, you know, salutatory, you know, namesake or nameplate people.
Right.
But just to go to that step and realize what that means and what
to bring the Roddenberry family in. Yeah.
Right. Right. Which have always been co-supportive, but have not ever really been financially hooked in with the you know, the production or the money-making arm of Paramount or split Paramount CBS custody years either since Gene died. So no, all those steps have been amazing, and I'm just hopeful. I was gonna say that. Aside from breaking it down, like, you know, guys, you do know it's like $6 a month means $1.50 a show. I mean, like, really, are you gonna scream about this?
Yeah.
And some of those solutions, like you said, like just run it for 3 months and come back. I just there's a piece of me also that wants to say, I am so sorry, guys. You guys that are so upset about this, I'm really so sorry that you're in a freaking time of media transition. And some of this stuff is, you know, Star Trek or not, this stuff is just going to shake itself out. It's just going to take a while.
Yeah.
You know, we're watching network TV take over from network radio. You know, we're watching shows decide whether or not it was time to go to color or whether they couldn't afford it yet. You know, I mean, we're in a transition time. You know, we're like in the movies going, oh, that damn TV, they're stealing all our audience. We have to go to Panavision and CinemaScope to get people to come to theater. I mean, all of that stuff. We're in a time of you know, and oh, they're ripping us all off online. You know, we got to make them pay for each album. You know, we're just at a time of transition. It's happening faster and faster. And it's an honor for Star Trek, again, to be picked as the pivot point there and be the... Mm-hmm. Be the, you know, the flagship that's going to sail this new ship and like shut up and enjoy the ride, guys. I mean, you'll find a way. You'll find a way.
Yep. You know,
it's all the world. It's not a static world. The rest of the world is going to be juggling this way, too. I'm sure the other networks are going to be doing something like this, some kind of a deal. And it's all going to be shaking down for a few years to go. If it's ever just not flat evolving, we may never have a stasis time. You know, it may just always be for a long time.
Yeah.
The way the digital media is exploding all around us. So anyway, just hold on to your panties, folks. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Space panties, please.
Space. Yeah. I want that on a button. Space panties, please. Yeah.
Now, okay. We've talked a lot about logistics and about the business aspect of it. Is there anything like creatively that you want to see there? Is there some kind of format or some kind of adventure that you've always thought, wow, it'd be cool if they went into that in more detail? Is there an alien race that you always thought it'd be fun to have one of him or her as a permanent character? What do you think about them? The exciting stuff.
I haven't given a thought to that. Tellarites. No, there's an awful lot of that in there. What's been interesting is the great rumors now. It's like, okay, I guess we're just going to be, you know, have to suffer through rumor season until some of this does come out.
Suffer through rumor season. For the internet, rumor season is their bread and butter, right? It's when
I hate wasting time. Right. I hate wasting time on
them. Sorry.
But especially when it's – no, I mean the clickbait kind. If it's real legitimate stuff, but I mean opening up and seeing 15 stories that all go back to one story that you wind up realizing was just one sentence taken from somebody's thing. And it is amazing to watch how the entire world is now paying attention to like Les Moonves' quarterly earnings. Suddenly microscopically, you know, analyzing every word.
Well, that's what Kayla and I were doing yesterday.
Yep. Oh yeah. Well, that's the crumbs you got right now. But years ago, I was the one that said I want a founding of the Federation Romulan War show for years because I thought it would help the writers out and be a great gap filler for background. And it was a totally unexplored area. And all those people that were like, oh, it's a sequel. Ooh, it's a sequel. Like it was a dirty word. It's a prequel. It's a prequel. And you're going backwards. That's the next crop of people I really wanted to say, shut up, shut up. But, I couldn't help with the execution at times. But the concept was what I was. But a couple things. There's a lot of rumors running around from wherever you come from about possibly going to anthology, which would be amazing and something I could never do when they were so invested with the overhead of a given time period.
Yeah.
But if you're only going to have 12 or 13 or 15 shows, maybe you don't get so invested that you don't do that. And if they CG and, you know, green screen and stuff too. But, I mean, my thing I always wanted to see that I thought made a lot of sense from a business writing, writer's creativity freedom aspect and gap filling was to do mid Kirk Picard. Like,
sure.
I want to see the Tomet incident, and I want to see First Contact with Cardassia, and I want to see the Romulans withdrawing, but they're still, you know, kicking the Klingons' butt all the time. Those two are still not getting along. And all of that era, the BC era, seems to be really, you know, whether it's the ships or not, just that era seems to be ripe. Or go, somebody said this, and I was like, oh, duh, that'd be great. Go back to April's time.
Oh, wow. Know?
Or finally do the Romulan War. And the other thing that's great about anthology,
wasn't that supposed to be the fifth season of Enterprise? Weren't they going to do the Romulan War then?
Yeah, I would have got there, movie that Berman had in development.
Berman Commission.
Jendresen's script would have been the wrong, but you know, whatever now. But that's still there on the table. So I mean, I think maybe going forward is problematic because then you wonder if society and production tech and all that has advanced enough. Like, I thought it was great. It was painful, but letting 20 years go by between the 60s and the 80s, you couldn't help but have a look that looked more modern than the original series, right?
Right.
And have it be production as well as social attitudes penetrating the writers and all that and the audience. And I, for a while, I didn't know if it'd been long enough to jump ahead, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years to do that past Picard, Sisko, Janeway. And now people are so invested in online, in STO, you'd have to come to a thing of, are we going to use their canon? Which before was never an issue, which is why I never got really invested in the games. But this is like, you know, no Star Trek game we've ever, you know, where no Star Trek has gone before.
You're talking about some point, the MMORPG Star Trek Online.
Right. At some point, do you finally say, hey, it's been great, and you guys who are invested still keep bopping along, and we'll just let it be like the old Starfleet Battles guys who are still out there playing on their tech manual layout of the star charts, you know, because that's just the way it came about. At some point, you may have to officially say, okay, this is its own little bubble universe, and we're going to let the writers do their thing. Or do you get, like, really radical, and Brian says, hell no, we're going to do, like, Defiance, and we're going to use the STO canon and make the contract so, you know, or if that's even doable and the lawyers can make that all happen, or maybe it was secretly set up already to happen for just this, or as I'm thinking, probably no one ever stopped to think about this. But whatever, I can see problems going forward, or maybe it's not a problem at all. But I hope this whole thing about it's got to go forward, we can't go backward, you know, people grow up a little bit about that, because there's all kinds of corners of the sandbox that are just so ripe. We could have a Klingon Game of Thrones. My people have been saying something like that for ages. You know, the houses, the great houses of Kronos. That could be a 12, 13 part. But the other cool thing is you could have it in different time periods. You could go all over the place in time as well as space. And you would be, depending on the time period, you could have are known people from the past coming in as guest stars.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. So it would be, and it's the kind of thing that Brian would pull. So he'd be totally open to that. So that'd be really flexible. But yeah, I'm thinking it's Prime. I'm thinking, and if they do that, they won't be invested in any one era anyway. But I was just really amused when the rumor stories came out where it said, oh, look, it's past Star Trek VI. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's what I was thinking. And no, it's post TNG. No, it's not. It's this. And I'm like, okay, guys, if you're just going to turn into rumor of the week just to be because you want hits on your site, then get out of here. You know, but we'll see. We'll see. It could be, hey, you kids, it's all of these. You know, like the old Saturday Night Live commercial. It's a dessert topping and a floor wax. Ha ha ha. So, you know, it could be all of that.
Wow. Yeah. I have a horrible taste in my mouth at this point.
Oh, okay. I'm sure that's on YouTube somewhere.
I'll look for it.
It's a dessert topping. No, it's a floor wax. Hey, you two, it's both. Yeah.
Well, I for one am now waiting until someone makes a remix of the Game of Thrones theme in the style of Klingon opera.
Oh. Well, I don't know if they'll certainly be able to, because from what I hear, Klingon as a language cannot be copyrighted.
Oh my God. So talk about a place where I haven't like tried to put any of my energy. I'm just not that I'm like a Pollyanna, but it's just like I just want that to be over and done with and decided and
yeah,
you know, and go away and let's get on with the future. And you know, it'll get decided. It'll probably be eventually a good thing. But it's just when I say negativity, I don't mean confrontational. I mean like it's just such an energy suck to me right now when we've got. And again, not trying to be a Pollyanna cheerleader here, but I'm like we've been waiting 10 years to get a new series out, and you know, and I haven't said a word about Beyond. I'm the eternal optimist. I hope all these foreboding signs of no teaser and no announcement and no promotion are not going to be you know bad things. I'm going to be at the May 20th event covering it, so we'll see what's going on with that. But it's such an exciting time on top of even the party. I was starting to wonder if 2017 would just be this big hangover year because everybody's shooting their wad for 2016 on, you know, name the angle of fandom or franchise or both. But apparently not. We'll have all kinds of excitement going on in 2017. So I, you know, that's where I try that. And, you know, my projects that I'm working on, like Portal 47 and all that, backstage deep space diving. So deep portal, deep diving. So, that's, you know, that's where I focus. But I know it's a car wreck. It's a train wreck. You can't help but pay attention to what's going by, and there will be repercussions for the future. But I just want to get on with I just want to get on with the future, to coin those fans' phrases, and, you know, get on with it.
Well, we are starting to run out of time here, but before we go, I really want to make sure I ask you, tell me about Portal 47.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for asking. It's just the culmination of all these years of all the stuff that I've, you know, been really privileged to work on. And like I said, when I got the keys to write books and then edit Communicator and work on the fact files, I felt like I finally got a chance to do what I wanted to do and I thought other fans would want. And everything I've always done, it's just kind of been with that point of view. Here's what I want to know. I'm sure there are other people out there that want to know this. And I love the actors. I love the actors. But I really got tired of. I remember one convention in Denver, a Starland convention in Denver, and it was either Jonathan or Michael Dorn or somebody, and people would ask questions, and they kept saying, "You know what? That's a Herman Zimmerman question. You know what? That's a Michael Westmore question. You know what? That's a Bob Blackman question." And I was sitting there in my seat, going, "Then let's get them on stage," you know. And so that's been the subtext a lot of what I've done over years and why I've enjoyed doing what I do. So Portal 47 is kind of and in this fallow time and this time when all the big box things are kind of imploding and it's reinventing this landscape, and I've been trying to figure out a way to have something new for fans, because for all the stuff that I knew was out there that people didn't have access to or get to. And I mean everything from, you know, like my own memories and things of being very privileged to be on a front row for all those years to my own physical archives, from the interviews preserved on down to paper, actual paper stuff, to all these people that have worked, like I was talking about earlier. And Portal 47 has kind of, with the hope of a help of a entrepreneur coach, I launched it last fall. We're still building. It's still being tweaked and tinkered. We're in the early days still, but it's really exciting because I feel like we're taking everybody on a deep dive and giving them a look at Star Trek that they haven't seen before, and in a package that works for everybody no matter where their center seat is, I say. So it really is. It's like a backstage pass deep dive every month, and it's a year-long subscription for the cost of 2 movie tickets a month or 3 lattes or whatever. So it's $25 a month, and there's several pieces in the package. There's some live components. We'll have Portal 47 parties where I'm a guest at a con. I'm doing a day tour component when people are here in LA, and not to compete at all with our big tour that I do with Terrace with Geek Nation Tours, but when people are on their own schedule and they come to LA. Portal47.net. I say it's like a mini con all year long, no matter where your center seat is. And the folks that are in so far, if you go over to the Facebook page, I'm about to revamp my online LarryNemechek.com and everything, hopefully by summer con season, and have some videos up and things. But I'm not ashamed. It's still there. And the Facebook page. And I'm just really excited. The best thing of all is when we have one of our telebriefings, and I have somebody on like Robin Morselli, who was the lead stand-in during DS9, or we have Alan Sims, who was prop maker, or Phil Wayland, who was D. Kelly and William Shatner's stand-in through all the original series movies.
Cool.
Yeah, just all kinds of people, and a lot of the guys so far, they get online and everybody says that was the most amazing. Like those stories, when hearing Brad Look, a makeup guy, talking about Michael Westmore insisted on trying on the Tom Paris threshold amphibian thing on himself, and they had to, and the glue soaked through, and he said, "Mike, you should wear something plastic." He goes, no, just put it on me. And the glue soaked through, and they had to he was like ripping up his skin to take it off.
Oh, gross.
That should have been assigned to them that the whole episode was cursed.
Yeah. It was too.
They should have stayed away.
But sitting here now, later on, see your reaction. That was just awesome. It was just, and I had no clue. I didn't know we'd take down that road. But that's what's so fun. And I say, look, it's for new fans. It's for old fans. It's for bored fans. It's for fans that don't even know what all is out there that they don't know. So yeah, come over and take a look and join in with us. We have a great time. And it's finally the way that I feel like I'm getting everything that I can contribute and give back and preserve and interpret and connect dots for fandom my own way. So, you know, it's more than a podcast, more than a magazine, more than, you know, a lot of documentary and a lot of fun. So thank you for asking, Caleb.
Excellent. Oh, sounds pretty good to me.
Totally.
Well, before we go, do you guys have any other questions you want to ask Larry?
Larry, what's your favorite episode of Star Trek that's not one of the 10 most famous episodes?
Oh.
If that makes sense.
No, I got you. For years you could just say Star Trek and mean the original series, and I'm rusty about having that for all the other series after that. I will say that I have this favorite underappreciated episode of Star Trek in the original series, which is, and I know you're going to hoot at this, Friday's Child.
Oh, I like Friday's Child. Julie Newmar.
Yes. Well, Julie Newmar's one big real reason. But, I mean, the story and the writing and all the scenes with the big three and the big four and the structure of the story. And I just – and the McCoy – partly it's because it's a great McCoy show. But
is that the one where he slaps a pregnant woman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's secretly Batwoman, so it's okay.
Catwoman. Yeah.
And it's also a warrior. Oh, it's also a warrior culture.
Sure.
It's also
a
warrior culture.
Yeah. It's the big warriors wearing carpets out on a desert planet. That's what it is.
Yeah. But,
isn't that also where he says, "I'm a doctor, not an escalator"?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. That's one of the good doctor lines. But the one of the best tag scenes, you know, Leonard James, Aka R. You know.
Yeah. You two are going to be insufferably pleased with yourselves for at least a week.
Yep. I think it's a name destined to go out in galactic history, don't you, Leonard? Yes, James. One of the two or three tag scenes. And if I thought about it, I'm not thinking about it for the other ones because they're just kind of like a blur on the wall.
Sure.
But, I just know that I my favorites of DS9 all tend to be the atypical shows.
Okay.
So, and that's probably the same as, and Voyager and Enterprise are such a blur, but. By the time you're watching them firsthand, it's kind of hard to separate sometimes. But yeah. But that's the way. I'll still stick with Friday's Child because I don't think it gets enough respect.
Hey, the thing,
and it gets hooted at.
The thing I appreciate you saying about Friday's Child is I've always felt that there was a kind of a, a cultural connection between TOS and the original Batman show. And my dream project, if someone gave me more money and more influence in Hollywood than I deserve, would be a buddy comedy with Adam West and William Shatner.
they were in something together. They were in that Alexander pilot that Shatner did right before Star Trek.
Oh, that's right. I haven't
seen
that.
Adam West is like his like right hand man.
What's this called?
Alexander. It's a pilot Shatner did like the year before Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Oh, is this like
it's
set in
all
Roman
these half
times
naked
or
men
something?
Running around on horses?
It's Shatner running around in loincloth.
Okay, he showed pictures of this when I saw his one man show, but and I didn't know what it came from.
He sure did.
No, it's out there. It's either out in the gray market somewhere or it's on YouTube or something.
Right there on Daily Motion. Yeah. Okay, there it is. Yeah. I feel even better about it. I'm so glad I mentioned this.
Well, now they could do a web series. You know, it'd be like superhero leads riding around getting coffee in futuristic comic vehicles or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Larry, I had a question. I assume you're going to be in Vegas?
Oh, yes.
And New York as well?
I'm still seeing about New York. I'm not sure what's up exactly with that, or since it's a new one and new people, and I've reached out, so we'll see what's going to happen. But I want to be. I want to be. I think it's going to be a real historic time. Anyway, they'll be rolling out all kinds of things on the series by then, and that's not far from Toronto, or at least it's hell of a lot closer than LA is. So we'll see. No, there's a lot going on this year, and I've wound up doing a lot more conventions and small ones, and libraries having events for the 50th, and I'm going to wind up doing 5 libraries nights in a row in and around Central Michigan and Detroit in September, in later September, not around the anniversary weekend. So that's awesome. But I'm going to go to Shore Leave for the first time in about 10 years, finally. And anyway, Phoenix Comic Con coming up, and then...
hey, Kayla.
Phoenix and Space City. We're going to shoot some more on, hopefully, do the last visit to Houston for the Con of Wrath documentary and overlap with Space City Comic Con and then SoonerCon back home in Oklahoma City, and then, you know, San Diego and Vegas, obviously, and Pensacola Comic Con. I'm going to be there at the end of August and a convention called Cosmic Con that Famous Monsters of Filmland and A&E History Channel with the Ancient Aliens.
Is over
Halloween weekend, and they're having a spotlight. It's a new event called Cosmic Con that they're co-sponsoring. Wow. And that's over Halloween weekend. So yeah, it's going to be crazy. And then the tour is going to be 10 days. So by the time we hit Vegas, I think I'll be talking for like 20 straight days or something.
Holy cow.
Between all those cons.
Ouch.
Wow.
So if you see me in Vegas and I'm still alive, just, you know, give me a medal or something.
Yeah. I hope you have a good, strong constitution.
I do. If I had a constitution class, I think it would be...
Boom, boom.
I'm going to back out of here now.
Take my Larry
Nevich,
please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Get the space dock doors open, Scotty. We're backing out of here in a hurry. Full impulse. Or a little too much impulse already.
If anyone wants any info on that, I guess they can find it on LarryNevich.com.
Yes, the calendar's up. It'll be changing look, hopefully, by the summer. Cons, but LarryNemichuk.com and at Larry Nemichuk on Twitter and Larry Nemichuk's Trekland on Facebook. And if you're really interested, there's a Con of Wrath on Facebook and there's a Portal 47 on Facebook and there's a Trekland trunk if you want to see what I'm unpacking from these boxes that have been stuck away from studio stuff and old retail collectibles and things. So it's all there. But LarryNemichuk.com is still a good hub.
Awesome. And we will put links to all of those places in the article that goes along with this episode.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And hopefully somewhere along the summer, I'll be talking about Enterprise in Space 2, which is our nonprofit that I still speak for, which is, you know, putting 100 or more student science, STEAM students projects from around the world on an 8-foot orbiter named the NSS Enterprise, sponsored by the National Space Society, and part crowdfunded and part with... grants and things from big corporate backers. So, but very much a grassroots project too, and started by fans with some really smart people involved. And hopefully, I'll get to talk about that through the year too.
Great.
Enterpriseinspace.org.
Very cool.
Can't go by without mentioning them.
Larry, thanks for coming on the show. Whenever you want to come,
thank you so much.
Whenever you want to come back, there's always a mic for you.
Oh, guys, that's very sweet. Thank you, though. And hopefully I behaved and got us out of here before too late.
I did want to...
Well,
oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I have a Trek anecdote to finish us out.
Ah, perfect. All right. But well, let's hear it.
Okay, that's kind of a graceless segue. Larry, we try to end every episode with an anecdote about a little moment from our life where Star Trek kind of came in and either made a joke or something like that. And you know, I talked about one where first one of these we did, where a CEO I'd worked for had made a reference to the Kobayashi Maru in a meeting, and some guy didn't know what it meant, and he tried to fake it, and he thought it was something good, like utopia, and I had to explain, no, it means no-win scenario, it's a bad thing. Anyway, so the Trek anecdote I experienced recently is I live here in Washington, D.C., and the Folger Shakespeare Library, in April, they one Sunday, they dedicate to Shakespeare's birthday. So I went with some friends. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun. It's like a mini Renaissance fair, but with a lot more like legitimacy because you're right there with all these great actors and these great resources that they have. And they did like an open mic night where you could go up and recite your favorite Shakespeare monologue or whatever. And my friends are needling me, and they're like, Jared, you should go up and do it. And I said, okay, well, what would Captain Picard do? And I remembered that episode where he's starts quoting Shakespeare to Loxana Troy. And so I found one of the...
Oh, the bad one, yeah.
Well, okay, it's not a great episode, but it's a great scene, right?
No, I mean he quotes him badly.
Oh, sure,
he's
yes.
Performing badly.
He's obviously... it shows what a great actor he is that he can play, that he can act badly. So well, right?
Exactly.
And so I found one of the sonnets up there that he quotes from there, and I went up and quoted it. It's sonnet number 147, where he says, "My love is a fever which longeth still for that which longer nurseth the disease." And I went up and I tried to do like a Picard accent. Went over very well, got a big applause. And I just was so grateful that when I needed to access the canon of Western literature, the Captain Picard was there for me.
And excuse me, yeah. What numbered's... Yes, and what numbered sonnet was that?
I think it's 147.
I think it sounds like it was, yes.
Yeah.
Just saying. Most common random number in the universe.
Just saying, Portal 47 done it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Here's what you're doing. You see? It's like, that was completely unplanned. Completely unplanned.
I know. And that's why it was beautiful. Oh, guys. Anyway, guys, thank you. I should clear out and let you have your space back. But thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you again. Pleasure. We really appreciate it.
We will see you around the galaxy.
I plan on it.
Contact Starfleet. Inform them that Federation mining rights on Capella have been secured by treaty, documents signed by the young High Chief's regent. Report follows.
Aye, aye, sir.
Childs, regent?
Yes, L.E.N. Remarkable young lady.
Representing the High Tier, Leonard James Akkar. The child was named Leonard James Akkar. Has a kind of a ring to it, don't you think, James?
Yes, I think it's a name destined to go down in galactic history, Leonard. What do you think, Spock?
I think you're both going to be insufferably pleased with yourselves for at least a month, sir.
Mm-hmm.